Divining Rod by Tappan, and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire, Maryland's 5/8 Mile Training Track completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve.
We're back, hour two, and looking forward to a visit with Gary Young, because we always look forward to visits with Gary Young. They're always fun. And, you know, after winning a $1 million race, that makes it even more fun. So, yeah, particularly, let's be honest. I mean, Gary's addressed this with us, you know, after what transpired involving Medina Spirit, you know, to have this horse come along and, you know, for his client, for Amr Zidane, it's satisfying. And they paid, you know, they paid top dollar, obviously. You know, they pay $1.7 million for a horse, and you've got certain expectations. But then, you know, they have to go out. They have to meet those expectations. They have to stay healthy. And, you know, that's a tall order a lot of times, especially if they're talented, right? I mean, look at what has gone on for John Sadler and Costa Aronis and the team with Flightline. I mean, a horse that was just so, you know, so fast and so delicate, you know, you had to be, you know, you had to be ginger. And so here's Taba, who has matured with each start, and that was really borne out with the performance on Saturday. Gary Young joins us from Santa Anita. Undoubtedly still aglow, no matter how little sleep he got before the flight back to California yesterday. Gary, congratulations to you and Amr and Bob Baffert and Mike Smith.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I slept a little bit of the plane ride. I'm getting through, you know. I mean, I can do 2 hours, and then after 2 hours, I'm pretty much awake for the flight. But only a 4.5-hour flight, it was okay.
Well, you know? it's easy to be satisfied or to be, you know, content when you know you're playing Saturday's result over in your head.
Yeah, and I'm playing Saturday night's dinner over in my stomach too. That was good grub. Now let me tell you, that was, you know, I haven't been on my scale since I got home for obvious reasons, but I mean that was some awful good food.
Well, as I told everybody, and I put it up on Twitter too, actually. And
I saw that.
Well, and it's fun, you know, to be able to celebrate any win, out is fun. But, you know, for that level for you, and I was saying, as Casey was raising you, you know, given everything that has gone on for you and Ammer when it comes to, you know, particularly with Medina Spirit, it's got to be satisfying to have this horse go, you know, whatever direction he's going to go and you know, wherever he takes you from this point on, it has to assuage some of the sadness and frustrations.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's still tough when the Medina thing ended on December 7th last year. That's something you'll never get out of your head. But, I mean, it's nice to bounce back with another good horse. And hopefully, this time last year, the three-year-old championship was still up in the air, and it's kind of up in the air again this year. So we'll see what happens. But horse came out of the race terrific, and we're very proud of his effort. And, we know there's going to be some really good horses in the Breeders' Cup. I mean, you know, Flightline Life is good, and Epicenter would probably be the three that would be, you know, that would be the first three that come to mind, but there's going to be more than just that in there, and see what happens. But we're very very confident that we haven't seen the best of this horse yet, Taba, and we think we think he's kind of going to hopefully just keep improving like his father did. And by the time his father got halfway through his four-year-old year, he became King Kong. He always was good, but he became King Kong, and hopefully, the Taba can run to what his father did.
Talk about the development, Gary, because obviously, as a professional bloodstock agent and as a clocker and somebody that watches, the way horses move. Talk about what you've seen and, what parts of his development curve took that step forward.
I mean, we liked the breeze at the sale was very good. We liked them, and we had to go pretty deep for him, obviously, but he was good, and we had him for a little while, and seemed okay, but we just gave him a little break. And when he came back, and he was training for his race in January, he was training okay. It was just something about him that we just thought that there was a whole lot more there than what he was putting out in the morning. And he was working fine, but, I mean, we just thought, this horse, there's more there than that, and so we go to run him first time out. We walk in the paddock, and he's 1-5. And we're like, wow. Johnny rode him that day, and he was, he was kind of niggling him down the back stretch. But when the horse figured it out at the top of the stretch, he just said adios and just came down the stretch. There's the horse that we thought was there. And still to this day, I mean, he knows the difference between the morning and the afternoon, and he's just okay in the morning. And in the afternoon, he's a little better than just okay. And, that's fine. I mean, that's fine with me as long as he knows what time of day it is when he goes out there in the afternoon. That's all that really matters. He's a very nice horse and good horse to be around.
The trip in the Haskell and the trip here, I mean, one of the things that seemed to come out from the Haskell was that, he needed more seasoning, essentially. And so, to be down inside again and, to kind of run through it a little bit more with more confidence and more of a polished product. I mean, that's sort of a next step, right? I mean, that's what you're hoping for.
Yeah. I mean, if he'd
if he would have handled down there as, on the Haskell as good as he did the other day in the Pennsylvania Derby, I feel he'd have won the race. But that's water under the bridge, and Haskell was just. The horse is inexperienced, we felt, got him beaten that race. He blew past Jack Christopher, and then this other horse had gotten through on the rail, and, I think the horse kind of let up a little bit, and by the time he saw him, he took a couple of lunges right at the wire and was trying to get back up, but he didn't get there, obviously, but he handled it way better the other day, and it's a definite progression that he shows. And we'll see what happens in the Breeders' Cup Classic. I mean, obviously, there would figure to be some real pace in the race, and we'll go from there. But we were kind of looking forward to the rematch with Cyberknife, and this is, I mean, he's a very nice horse, but we kind of thought we probably should have won the Haskell had his inexperience not gotten to him, and we were welcoming the rematch the other day. Let's just put it that way.
Well, and that, that does bring up a pretty fascinating conversation point, and that is that these grade one wins and these high level wins are being spread out pretty good between Epicenter breaking through in the Travers, Cyberknife sitting with the Arkansas Derby and the Haskell and also the Matt Wynn win. And now you've got Santa Anita Derby and Pennsylvania Derby. Epicenter is where he is. Those two placements, obviously in Derby and Preakness, those are placements with a little extra. We're in an unusual circumstance, Gary. We talked about this Saturday night about what transpires now, because there's a real likelihood that. That the 3-year-olds are not going to be able to topple, the Breeders' Cup Classic as a clincher. How do you want everybody to view this?
It's supposed to come down to who runs second. I mean, that's what we thought last year when Nick's Go was kind of a prohibitive favorite.
Not near as
Flight Line's going to be this year, and they lined up right behind him at the eighth pole. Medina Spirit, Mandaloon, Hot Rod Charlie, Essential Quality, they'll end up right behind him. And despite getting left and despite being wide all the way around the racetrack, Medina blew them all away, but it didn't equate to an Eclipse Award. Well, the same thing happens this year. I mean, if Flightline goes out there and does what he's been doing and wins the race, shouldn't the 3-year-old championship be decided by how they come in following him? If they are the Breeders' Cup championships like they're billed out to be, that's the day the championships are supposed to be decided. We're in a year this year where it's kind of ironic that the Triple Crown, the three horses that won the Triple Crown, pretty much are not going to be. Because Mo Donegal went down with injury and early voting didn't really do much after his Preakness win, and Rich Strike, since the Derby is just free and okay. I mean, the Triple Crown is not going to have a whole lot of bearing on the 3-year-old championship this year, so it's still up for grabs in a very big way.
It's fair. It's fair. It's an unusual, it's really an unusual circumstance, especially because, Gary, that this feels like a good group. I mean, this is a really, we've had a series of high-level performances from these 3-year-olds.
We have. I mean, Cyberknife had a very, very good year. It wasn't his best effort the other day, but he's had a very good year. There's all kinds of horses that depending on what they do the first weekend in November can maybe lay claim to the three-year-old crown. There is. So.
Anyway. Let me ask you a funny question. Would a race like the Malibu potentially be intriguing as a?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, it's kind of a funny thing because then you're running in the classic on. You're running a mile and a quarter in the Classic on Breeders' Cup Day, and then you're shortening up to 7/8 on December 26th. It is a very prestigious race, always has been through the years, and it's a Grade One. But in this unusual way the year is set up, it could maybe be a little bit of a determining factor in who gets the Eclipse Awards, but that would be more predictable as to whether that might happen after the Breeders' Cup than before the Breeders' Cup. But yeah, that's an unusual type of situation that could happen this year. That's true.
Well, because he would be. You know, something of a precisionist style maneuver, you know, and he,
yeah.
I mean, he seems to have that kind of talent.
He does. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. He proved he could do what he did sprinting first time out. Okay. So that wasn't Grade One quality, but I mean, all of them are, like, Epicenter, the thing about him, like, you look at his PPs, the first time he ran, he didn't take any money, and he just ran okay, and then all of a sudden, the light came on, and he became King Kong. You know, it's kind of a weird way in a lot of different ways this year.
You probably have had more of a chance to talk to Ammer as well, and his thoughts adding this to the resume.
Well, he's thrilled to death, and he's looking forward to the Breeders' Cup. He knows what's out there as far as our competition and everything, but. You know, this is kind of what he lives for as far as the horse racing world goes. I mean, we were fortunate enough to win a Grade One last Saturday, and this Saturday we got Country Grammar in a Grade One out here trying to win the Awesome again for 2 years in a row as Medina won it last year. And then the Saturday after that, we're going to have Hijazi running in the American Pharoah. So, you know, this is why he wants to play the game at a high level to run in these kind of races. And like I said to him after we were on the way down in the winner's circle the other day, one down and two to go. But, you know, that he's, you know, it's a very good time of year, and it's very, you know, it's very nice to have these horses eligible for these races because, it's just not a guarantee that we're going to have horses like that for every year. But this year, it appears we have a lot of action, at least going into the Breeders' Cup preps, have some action on November 4th and 5th, or 3rd and 4th, or whatever it falls on.
Gary Young with us. We're talking about Taba's win in the Pennsylvania Derby, and one of the things that you certainly seemed excited about on Saturday was the fact that, you know, he is going to come back as an older horse as well. And, you know, bringing up Country Grammar does beg the question, is that kind of a campaign, should that be anticipated for him? Given Ammer and you know, given what we saw, you know, Country Grammar going to Saudi and to Maidan?
Yeah, well, he handled it very well last year. Obviously, he's a stayer, so he doesn't, the further the better with him. And considering he ran so well in those races last year, he would definitely definitely be a candidate to go back again this year. You know, I mean, Tava could even go over there also. I mean, it's gonna.
Well, that's what I'm asking. That's what I'm asking about.
Yeah, Tava could definitely go over there. I mean, he could. It's a funny situation because, you know, there's a lot of ifs. If Flightline stays in training and doesn't go over there, then those races might be a lot tougher this year than they were last year because it's a chance to run for huge money and avoid Flightline. So those races, there could be a lot of horses that would maybe go over there, and those races could be a lot deeper as far as, you know, really top horses. If and it's all hypothetical, if Flightline stays in training and chooses not to go over there, there could be a lot of participation by the other horses in America, much more, you know.
So. Well, and Country Grammar and Taba, the luxury for next year. And since you brought up Hijazi, give us a feel, Gary, because, of course, he's going to go in as a maiden to the Faro. That Speedboat Beach that just kind of took everybody by storm and surprise.
It's surprised if you saw his workouts. You know, he was a very fast horse. I mean, he's probably, by looking at him, he's probably a one-turn horse. He's a very good one-turn horse. That was my whole Del Mar meet in a nutshell right there, that race. We had a horse that broke the track record but still didn't win. That's kind of how Del Mar went for me this year. But we've always thought Hijazi would be better around two turns. You know, the first time he blew the start, and he got beat by a pretty nice horse that had the outside post and that had trained well for the race. That was the only horse I thought that had a chance of beating him. And the second race, I mean, you know, we knew that. I mean, Speedboat Beach, that horse, he was what he did in the afternoon. He kind of told you he would do that in the morning. It's very fast leaving there, and you know. He was, Hijazi stayed in rhythm and ran second to him, but Hijazi was more of a, you know, he's like a steady, he's got speed, but he just acts like, you know, he just acts like a horse that around two turns, he'll be a better horse.
Well, and it's funny because that you mentioned that first start and Classical Cat. I forget who I was with, Gary, but they had talked to you and they had said, where, what? Oh, I know where I was. I was with Jimmy Ventura. And,
yes.
And Jimmy had said, you know, Gary thinks that this, the only horse that he's worried about is this horse on the outside. And that was the Phil D'Amato, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly who it was.
Michael House owns that horse, a good friend of mine. And, it was like everything that could go wrong did go wrong. Hijazi broke in the air and a little bit, and he went up there, and it looked like he might go to lead, but to go to lead, Mike was going to have to, you know, pretty much ride him hard the whole way, so he kind of let him settle back a little bit and would teach him something, and when the flop came down, to use a poker term, you know, we were right behind two long shots, and Humberto was on Classical Cat, and he had us right where he wanted us, you know. And so we had to wait for him to clear. We got out, and you know, Mike could see we probably weren't going to get there, and he ran a decent second. But yeah, that was seems kind of unbelievable. He's still a maiden after two races the way he trained, but he is. So that's the worst thing that ever happened. So we'll be fine. But yeah, it's kind of a, you know.
Gary, who else is, are there any other unraced two-year-olds to come yet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we got a horse named Arabian Knight. That was Uncle Mo. That was a sales topper out of April that acts very nice. And, We got another horse we bought out of April at Justify, that Arabian Lion, that actually worked even with Speedboat Beach and won in his first work at Delma. So we definitely got some of them warming up in the bullpen down there. We do. We do.
So we can look forward to that at either how soon? I mean, Santa Anita, or are we going to wait till closer to the winter months?
You know, maybe by the end of this Santa Anita meet, maybe the Hollywood, maybe the Del Mar meet that's taken the place of the Hollywood Fall meet or something like that. Something like that, you know, hopefully by then, yes. Yeah.
Well, and actually, I'm just looking, Arabian Lion with a best of 89 bullet at Santa Anita last Sunday. So it was actually due, might have worked today, potentially. Or is he working today or tomorrow?
I don't know. Bob's here, and he's working a bunch of horses. I don't know if he's working him today or tomorrow. But, yeah, he worked well out of the gate last weekend. He was pretty good. You know, and the track here is—it's not as fast as the Del Mar track was. Hopefully, they're going to get tightened up a little bit. But you know, the track here has been not quite as fast. But he's—he worked real good, and we have hopes for him. Yes, we have hopes for him.
Very nice, all Arabian Night, Arabian Night, and Arabian Lion. And Hijazi this week. And Gary, obviously a pretty terrific weekend. You're one for one. Trips to Philadelphia. You'll be happy to come back, I think.
You know, I hope to have one next year. I hope to eat at that restaurant next year, and I hope we'll celebrate that restaurant next year.
That can be easily arranged. We'll make it a tradition. The four of us, Tina and I and Johnny and Gail, have been going for years. So, you know, you and Jennifer and everybody else in the party.
Okay. All right. Let's try to aim for that.
You got it. Gary Young, everybody, Gary Young Thoroughbreds, of course. Gary, yeah, you changed the website.
Yeah, sure. My lady that takes care of that, I got to call her today, Gwen. But, yeah, it's now, she wanted to make a Gary Young Bloodstock, so whatever she wants to do, that's fine with me.
GaryYoungBloodstock.com, and Gary will be happy to pick out a taba for you. As long as that taba isn't already picked out for Amer Zidane. And Gary told the story about the just keep bidding.
Right.
Right. Was there no budget? Was there no ceiling? Or I mean, you guys were going to get them no matter
on
what.
On taba.
Yeah.
On taba, we were all standing there, and I just kept raising my hand, and you know, finally at 1-7, the people we were bidding against didn't come back, and that was it. But there was no talk as to like pulling up anywhere during the bidding. You know, now you know, so. Turned out to be a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. It ends up being money well spent when considering where he is and where he could go yet. Gary, thanks so much. That was tremendous fun on Saturday. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Gary Young, everybody. GaryYoungBloodstock.com. Muggsy. He's I'll let Johnny later on. Johnny at the top of the hour will let Johnny riff about all the, usually it's Gary Young that's got the stories, but Johnny can tell a few of them. The racetrack, we always talk about characters. Well, he's an old school racetrack character, to say the least. happy for this success. I'm glad I planted that. I'm glad I planted that Malibu seed. I see it to me that doing something like that, if let's say they all these 3 year olds end up, we'll see what Johnny thinks. Say all these 3 year olds end up, whatever, they all get beat by Flightline. I mean, that, let's be honest. I mean, that feels like, you know, the most logical result here. So if Cyberknife, Taba, and Epicenter, if they all, you know, are within a length of each other behind them, what is that exactly? Where does that put us? It doesn't really give you any real clarification to me. I mean, if one finishes second, third, fourth, okay. I mean, that's what's so funny about this, because the Derby and the Preakness placements for Epicenter are going to be, you know, very highly factored. You know, and actually, I'll tell you who we're being unfair to is Rich Strike. And I mean, he's going to show up. Of course, we're going to see Rich Strike this week at Churchill in the Lucas Classic. And there's going to be pace. There's going to be pace in the Breeders' Cup. Let's not, you know. I mean, he that would, how crazy would that be if he pulls in unbridled? Right? Wins the Derby and then wins the Classic. What a mess that would be. It's just crazy. That's pretty funny. That's what is so great about this. That's why it's so appealing. It just makes it, you get all the time in between to speculate, and then, you know, there's what happens when the gates open, which makes it, you know, that much more fun. And we can bet on it. And in fact, you can even bet in advance on it now, to some degree, with the, they've done the two, right? They've done the two advances, but it just, I can't, I'd have to go back. And I'm not always the best for this off the top of my head, but top of my head, I don't remember. I mean, I suppose people would say, well, last year, but I don't necessarily think that there was much less established certainty, let's say, about Nick's go. There was still real uncertainty. Given what Flightline did in the Pac Classic, there isn't. We is who we thought he is, or however that that famous what was his name, Dennis, the Viking coach. We are who they, we thought we were. They were who they, we thought they were. he is, we think we know what he is, right, at this point. So anyway, all right. Gary Young, so much fun. But that Malibu concept, turn back 7/8, win a race like that, that also assumes that everybody voting, it waits until December 31st or January 1st to vote, and doesn't, you know, send it in before, you know, before a race like that, the Malibu and the La Brea, no matter how many times people are reminded, you know, don't send your ballot in until so forth. Well, and who was it that it was, was it Take Charge Brandy, right? Take Charge Brandy, that Lucas, you know, had the huge upset in the Breeders' Cup, but you know, that didn't preclude that she deserved the 2-year-old filly championship, and he ran her in the Princess he ran her in both the Delta Princess and the Starlet, correct? Yeah, and that's how he locked in. I'm going to look that up. I'm positive of that. I'm sure of that. It's not that long ago, is it? I'm 99.8%. Yeah, correct. Correct. Wins the juvenile November 1st, and comes back 3 weeks later, wins the Delta Princess on the 22nd, and then comes back 3 weeks later and wins the Starlet. Yep. And then, well, then the wheels kind of came off. But for that period, she'd been, you know, this I didn't remember. She had won at First Asking, was second in the Schuylerville, fifth in the Adirondack, fifth in the Pocahontas, eighth in the Alcibiades. Before going on that run, winning the juvenile fillies, the Princess and the Starlet. Yeah, amazing. And that I did not. I'll tell you right now. I know who I voted for, and it wasn't her.
I can't remember. Was that Lady Eli's year? I think it was. Right? Am I right about that?
2014, I think. Yeah. Yeah, 2014. I voted for Lady Eli. And, yeah, that's one of those difficult situations. Because, I mean, Lady Eli, I think, was 3 for 3 at 2. And I will pull that up. Yeah, that's correct. She broke her maiden at Saratoga, won the Miss Grillo, and then won the juvenile fillies. And I just thought that she was the best. I mean, that she was the best 2-year-old filly. I'm not making any apologies either about that vote. That is, there might be a vote or two historically that I'm not as proud of, but voting for Lady Eli that year as 2-year-old champion, I stand by that. Yeah. So, did she? And let me see that. And when did she? She did. She didn't. That's right, because she missed that year. She missed that swath of time, and ended up as the 2017 champion. She could have also been. Who was the Philly champion in 'cause she had the three starts. Okay, the Appalachian and the Appalachian, the Wonder Again, and the Belmont Oaks, and then was gone a year. That was really not timely. Interesting. And it's funny, as much as big a fan as I was of hers, her losing that photo to Queen's Trust, I didn't mind in the Breeders' Cup, because that was a bonanza. That was a huge score. So I don't know.
You know, it's sometimes you got to separate. In fact, we're going to have that conversation with Johnny. Sometimes you got to be able to separate. And in fact, I was going to bring it up with Gary, but we'll do that in a different setting. Maybe when we're out in California. Johnny and I and Gary had a really interesting few minutes at dinner Saturday night conversation, which revolved around the mistake of not leveraging your good opinions properly, specifically when it comes to win bets. And Gary was really making a strong case. I mean, and he's as big a multi-race player as you're going to find. And you know, famously big, you know, big successes playing the pick six, the old school pick sixes. But, you know, Gary really stressed, and Johnny, you know, concurred wholeheartedly about, you know, not, because I brought up Scaramouche as having quashed the middle pick four and the late action, because, you know, if you didn't have Scaramouche, you were a chicken in a pot. So, you know, Gary brought up he said, you can't, you know, you cannot have a decent priced win in a sequence go unutilized. And he's right. And I, you know, this summer, I've talked about this repeatedly, this summer where we had just some of the worst luck in memory, I, you know, about 3-4 weeks in, said, well, this is, you know, I can't keep banging my head against the wall like this. So, you know, we changed it up a little bit and started, you know, started trying to take advantage of opinions within a sequence, you know, to come away and also to back up and you know, not have the majority of a day's bankroll applied just to pick fours and pick fives, you know, but to, you know, play some tries, play some doubles, some pick threes, and you know, basically increase your opportunity to be right and to put them together. So that was that. I appreciated Gary's. I'll let Johnny go on. In fact, you know what? We're about 10 up. Let's do that. Let's take the break here, and so we'll come back and because there's a few things to talk about with Johnny, because that included the visit to the Jocks room on Saturday. What a fun! It was just a great day all around. All right, take a break. Come back. Hour three, Johnny D. We'll go back to Philly. We love going back to Philly. Back after this. Oh, well, I get you. So I guess Casey's sending me a note that he's got a computer. He's got the computer frozen. So I guess we didn't get out. So we're back. We're here. All right. So I'll wait till Casey. You give me the high sign. All right. You let me know. that was funny. While we await the chance to actually take a break, let me give you the other the rest of the numbers from the sale, and just record everything. What else is there to say? Record gross, record average, record median. The sale was ridiculous. Here's the final numbers. $405 million, basically 4055, the highest in Keeneland auction history. Record average, $142,429. Record median, $70,000. 2,847 sold in 12 days. Unbelievable. First time over 400 million, which was came closest in 2006. This gives you an idea. I mean, because anything that was pre 2008 is, you know, outstanding. Here's a couple of little notes from the press release. 88 different buyers spent $1 million or more during the sale. So, I mean, that's what you call a buying bench. 30 hips. 30 hips for $1 million or more. That's the most since 2007. And double 2021. The Quality Road, $2.5 million sales topper. Most expensive yet in North America this year, and second most expensive yearling in the world, sold at public auction this year. The top 10 went to 8 different buyers. I mean, obviously, the Viola Rapoli team was just, you know, just insatiable, essentially. 160, this is an interesting number, actually. 162 horses over $500,000 compared to 138 last year. That's stunning. Wow. So, 15%. Clearance rate of 82%. This was, I mean, people are dying for, they're just dying for good horses. I mean, it's obvious. And everybody will turn their attention now to Timonium. And, you know, it's going to be the Timonium, you would think, is going to be tough because the Pinhookers, they've got a guaranteed that the Pinhookers are not, they have not, necessarily. We'll get this week, actually, we'll get a couple of Pinhook opinions in as we get a little bit of a lull here. So, yeah, no, this was amazing. Pure and simple. So, thanks to everybody that provided the coverage and the insights. We really we enjoyed it. And first time opportunity for us to be on hand for a Keeneland yearling sale, which is very cool. We'll do more of that. All right. We're going to do more recapping and some hopefully some insights when it comes to picking and choosing the spots for leveraging opinions. I'm going to get Johnny to riff on that a little bit in light of some recent wagering success or failure. Hour 3 at the races. Back after this, Johnny D joins us.
Breeding program. The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
The Southern California $30,000 to the Pick Six pool. That's more money for the horse players to win.
Deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is national.